All I can say is, oh my goodness. You were just listening to the first movement of In a Deep Funk, dance set for unaccompanied contrabassoon by American composer Daniel Dorff. The work was premiered in 1997 and just performed by Roger Sorn, who actually presented the work's world premiere. Well, it is indeed my pleasure to welcome Daniel Dorff, who is joining me until 11 o'clock. Daniel Dorff is not only a gifted instrumentalist and composer, but is also a very down-to-earth human being. Daniel Dorff graduated magna cum laude from Cornell University and earned his master's degree in composition from the University of Pennsylvania, studying composition with George Crumb, George Rochberg, Carl Husa, Henry Brandt, Ralph Shapey, Ellie Sigmeister, and Richard Wernick. Dorff was composer in residence for Symphony in C, formerly the Haddonfield Symphony in Camden, New Jersey, from 1996 through 2015. His works have been commissioned by such ensembles as the Philadelphia Orchestra and the Minnesota Orchestra, and performed by groups and individuals, including the Baltimore Symphony, Eastman Wind Ensemble, flutists and clarinetists of the Chicago Symphony and Berlin Philharmonic, pianist Marc-André Hamelin, and flutist Jean-Pierre Rampal and Mimi Stillman. He has also created arrangements for Sir James Galway and Keith Emerson. Dorff has written many frequently performed recital works for woodwinds and music for orchestra, concert band, piano, chorus, and chamber ensembles, including often neglected instruments as contrabassoon, piccolo, and tenor saxophone, one of which you just heard. He has taken a particular interest in exposing young people to classical music, with many of his works being written for young audiences. Well, it is indeed my pleasure, Daniel, to welcome you. Thanks so much for coming.
Great to see you again, Marvin. It's my pleasure to be here and on a show that's meant so much to me over all these years. This morning driving in, you know, I hear composers whose music I don't know.
Well, Daniel, I have to say to people who don't know, I guess it's my keep awake person, or one of them, at the end of my marathons, which come between Christmas and New Year's. Daniel, usually come around the last hour, and we talk, and hopefully I won't fall asleep.
And we make fun of you for looking tired, but at the same time, odd that you can do 24, 25 hours on the radio.
It's really wild. Yeah. It is really wild. And I have known you for many years. We were talking about that. I think we communicated for the first time about 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah, I know. 2004 was the first time that we think you broadcasted one of my pieces, which means that we were in touch before
that. That point. Wow, a long time. Well, once again, thank you for coming, and happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
We will talk later about some events in honor of your 60th birthday. For now, though, just tell us about In a Deep Funk. That is really a cool piece, and it is hard not to smile while listening to it. I think that would be a great piece to play for some type of conference support music in our schools, because this is the type of music that young kids really enjoy listening to.
Yeah, well, I think that last point is a real interesting one, that there's maybe been sort of a generation gap, that when I was a student, pop-influenced serious music was not as embraced.
No,
and now it is quite a lot.
It's part of the whole thing.
And it's very genuine. You know, it's not crossover. Crossover is genuine, but it's a genre in itself.
This is
more just the way that Dvorak or Gershwin might have looked at things.
Yeah, when you hear some of those low notes, you wonder, oh, my, that's unbelievable.
Well, that's another, I love the contrabassoon.
Well, how much has been written for solo contrabassoon?
Not a whole lot, and honestly, I don't know the answer to that question, but the way this piece came about is that I had previously written a concerto that I believe we'll be playing later
this
morning.
Yes, we definitely will.
And an entrepreneur from Las Vegas happened to hear that, and he said, you know, I'm not a musician, but I love the contrabassoon, and I've never liked any orchestra music in my life until I heard your concerto. I mean, I guess because the contrabassoon was in it, but he commissioned me to write a piece for a contrabassoon convention that he was developing. And although I'm not really a professional performer, I've been a saxophonist and clarinetist.
Yeah.
And bass clarinet is my favorite instrument to play. So, again, not a whole lot of music, but the Bach cello suites on bass clarinet are just wonderful to play through. So I thought, okay, to write a solo unaccompanied piece for contrabassoon, I want to write a dance suite in the style, not in the style, but in the spirit of the Bach cello suites, taking different characteristic dances and writing solo pieces. The one we just heard is a rounded binary, the way that many Bach movements are.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, in terms of the form and the keys and all that. But it uses, that was called Hustle Misterioso, is the theme, and or is the title, rather, using the Hustle dance rhythm. And the any of you listening who thought you might have recognized a familiarity with some Bugs Bunny scores, there's a little old piece called Pizzicato Misterioso that was used for scary music, and that was where some of the pitches came
unbelievable. Unbelievable piece. It's hard not to just love it.
Oh, well, thank you.
It's wonderful. And they talk about the bassoon being the clown of the orchestra. This one really goes over the top, you know, because it's so funny and it's so it's so humorous and just so wonderful.
Well, to me, the contrabassoon is an extremely beautiful instrument. And I think one of the reasons why my contrabassoon music gets played by contrabassoonists a bunch is because I don't think of it the way that a lot of orchestral composers have used as a novelty, but just that I love the big, rich sound of it.
Yeah, and in the concerto, there is a lot of very rich sounds, and we'll hear that later.
Right.
Very good. Well, Daniel, let's go back to the beginning. First of all, what were your first exposures to music, and when did you decide you wanted to become a professional musician?
The first question is a little bit harder because we all listen to music when
we're
little. And I guess you could say, you know, as far as my development other than listening, I always loved listening to music. And I remember being like a 5 or 6 year old going to J.J. Newberry's to buy Beatle records, and it was all teenagers.
J.J. Newberry's. That is a name from the past.
Yeah, but you know, I've always listened to what I wanted to and, you know, and loved that. But, I mean, my development started playing recorder in second grade when people started playing instruments and playing saxophone in fourth grade and getting more curious and learning about chords and harmony and other music.
When you were young, were you listening to, like, the British Invasion and all that
stuff? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I saw your head going,
when,
oh,
when
yeah.
When you say young, like it started...
Well, you know, I mean, it starts a little late. I mean... We're still young. But the point is that the development...
And I'm still listening to the British Invasion.
I love it also. I love it also. And as I've talked sometimes, kind of my guilty pleasure is 70s Philly soul.
Well, that too. And I wrote a piece called Philly Rhapsody that was very directly inspired by that.
Interesting. We're going to have to talk about that.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, of course, you're a composer and have written many works. When did you decide you wanted to pursue that area?
There was a very specific, I think a lot of composers have like an epiphany moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why the Creston was
I see. You know, I knew we
give
would
it
get
away.
To that.
That. We didn't plan this at all. There's a big wink. When I was 16, the summer after 10th grade, I was just getting more and more dedicated to being a musician and practicing classical saxophone playing a lot. And I was in jazz bands, but I had discovered classical music and, you know, in a big way by then. And didn't know what to do about it because classical saxophone, especially back then, there were not university positions and nothing to do.
Right.
So I started doubling clarinet as a way to play in classical ensembles. And I went to a music camp called Red Fox Music Camp, which is right by Tanglewood. Really good camp. It's not there anymore, but it was near Tanglewood. So in addition to the camp itself, those of us who were 16 and over could thumb rides over to Tanglewood over the weekend. And one day they started rehearsing this piece, which was the Creston Fantasy for trombone. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that sound, I just was absolutely transfixed. It was sort of a cross between Tchaikovsky-ish bigness and Gershwin harmony, but yes. It had a much more vital rhythm to it.
Yeah, it does.
And I just, I was stunned. I mean,
and that was the beginning.
That was the moment. I mean.
So where, tell us briefly now about your very first works. Very first.
The first thing that I, well, you know, I had sort of written songs here and there, but not in a dedicated way. And since I was a classical saxophonist, then there wasn't a whole lot of repertoire 50 years ago like mm-hmm. that. Or at least I didn't know of a whole lot other than what was on the Allstate audition list. I thought, you know, I know what I want music to sound like. I'm going to make my own. And I'm going to write my own saxophone music and be like Paganini and, you know, be a soloist writing my own repertoire. But my first piece was a saxophone sonata, and I just got so hooked on composing that my priorities flip-flopped, that I became a performer secondarily.
Right.
And was writing a lot by 11th and 12th grade.
Right. Well, let's go now to a new recording. In fact, this is one of the features today. We'll be listening to some works and performances which were never aired before during the course of today's show. And we're going to listen now to your sonata, Three Legs for Flute and Piano, a work from 2013. Why don't you take over and tell us about the work and this new recording and our performers?
I would love to.
I had a feeling that you may not walk out on me for that one.
Right. Okay, well, so this piece is very special to me, and really every piece I've ever written is very special to me. But this is even more so in a lot of ways, because it has a certain kind of depth beyond just being a piece that I like. Let me say first, the recording we're about to hear is a sneak preview of a CD that will come out in several months. It's flutist Patricia Sermon and pianist Kostas Chardas. Patricia Sermon had been performing my Sonatine de Giverny on piccolo and had an All-American album in the works that she was planning on doing Sonatine de Giverny on. And a few months before going into the studio, she heard someone else play Sonata Three Lakes and asked me if it would be okay if she did the first recording. And I said, sure. there's a second recording, and actually it was funny because I wrote this for another flutist, Cindy Ann Brose, who at the time had not been able to fundraise for the CD that she wanted to put out. And she said, oh, that would be great if Patty did the recording. In the meantime, Cindy now also has a recording on Albany that will be coming out next year.
Oh, so that's great.
Yeah. So I'll perhaps be sitting in this chair a year from now talking about that. So the sonata, and why I talked about how it's deeper.
Yeah.
It's called Sonata Three Lakes because each of the three movements is inspired by a different lake that I've vacationed at, each of which has a certain deep association for me. So the first movement is called Lake Wallenpaupack, which is one of the lakes up in the Poconos that has resorts with heart-shaped hot tubs. And I mean, and it's beautiful up in the Poconos. But this is based on a love song that was based on a romantic weekend there. And actually, you know, just to digress musically, the construction of the music is totally based on the Ives Third Violin Sonata. And by that, I mean that, and to me, this is what's so fascinating about, people say my music is so traditional in language, but it's so influenced by everything else that I love Schoenberg, I love Ives, and I don't sound like them per se, but the Third Violin Sonata of Ives, the first movement of it has sections that are called verse one, refrain one, and then verse two and refrain two. So in a way, it's double variations, the way that Beethoven and Brahms would write, or Mahler would write variations on two themes. So it's very hearable in this, that this refrain keeps coming back in that way. The second movement is called Kezar Lake, and that's a lake in Maine, which is the home of a resort called Quissasana. Some musicians know this because they work there. Quissasana is a summer resort where all of the hired help are professional musicians, mostly singers, but some instrumentalists. And in the daytime, they work in the kitchen and make the beds. And at night, they perform opera and musical reviews. And my parents used to vacation there. My mom still does. And my dad loved it so much that he had in his will that when he passed away, he wanted his ashes scattered in Kezar.
Oh.
So while I was writing this or planning to write it, that happened. And so this movement is a memory of watching his ashes descend in Kezar Lake. Yeah. And there's also descending half-step motives that relate to other music and the first movement and so on. The third movement is called Salmon Lake. And whereas the first two movements are very watery in their fluid tempo, like, you know, they feel like you're on the lake. Salmon Lake is where I vacationed as a little kid. And you can hear 8-year-old little Danny, you know, all the way through Salmon Lake. And probably enough said about that, that it's a little boy scherzo. And so I,
Very good.
Probably more than enough.
That's good. For, so let's hear it. We listen now to the sonata Three Lakes by my guest, Daniel Dorff.